water. Adisla lifted the side of the sail and looked out around her. The light was jellyfish grey, the sea a gentle but stomach-turning swell. She thought of her mother. She thought of Vali. She knew she would never see him again. And she thought of the wolf man. Had he survived the attack? She tried to remember the words of the prayer to Freya.
"For the love I've known, lady, receive me."
Adisla lifted back the edge of the sail and slipped over the side. Chapter 27. Haithabir. The going was hard down the coast. Vali felt he couldn't risk stopping at any farmstead or fisherman's hut in case word went back to Forkbeard of the direction he had taken, so the men slept on beaches or in caves as they hugged the shore south. The advantage of the enduring daylight was that they could rest in shifts, Bragi working the sail for a time, Vali taking over when the warrior became tired. The wolfman could not sail or row, so he just sat, his head on his knees, staring at his feet and looking miserable. Felig proved a much better asset on land. He was an accomplished forager, bringing back seabird eggs and bitter plants to chew. So they ate well enough, supplementing the wolfman's food with seaweed and roots from the surrounding countryside. Water was easy to find. In fact, when it rained, they had rather too much of it. Vali wanted to get on, so he only stretched the sail across the boat as a shelter when the rain was at its heaviest. The rest of the time, he just worked the bailing pan as hard as he could. They were frequently soaked, but making progress, and that was the important thing. This was hostile territory, but their little fishing boat attracted less notice than a longship. Still, they had to be careful, rounding the lands of the Agder and the Vestfold, sprinting across the bright, broad bay of Vingulmarken and over to Alfheim. Then it was threading their way through the islands to Denmark and their destination, the trading town of Haithabir. This was where the Danes would have taken a slave. They were in constant peril. They had to keep the coast in sight for navigation, but this meant they risked being seen. Vali thought it would be a bored king who would launch a drakkar to catch some fishermen, but then again, kings did get bored. The weather was rough at times, but they were prepared, beaching the little boat, inverting it to use as a shelter, and sitting out the high winds for a few days until the going was safe again. Vali knew that even if Forkbeard had sent a longship after them, he'd be no keener to sail in bad weather. Longships could strike across the open sea, but, given the choice, clung to the coast and beached if they saw a storm coming rather than risk swamping. The boat seemed to crawl through the islands, though they were glad of them, the many coves and inlets providing good beaching and hiding places. And navigation was easy, if circuitous at points, as Bragi had travelled this way before. Once or twice they had to go west when their destination was south, but it was a small price to pay to avoid the open sea. Much of the journey was road, but they were following a trade route, so the currents and the winds were favourable. From their final stop on a beach, they could see a long promontory, a trail of smoke from a line of campfires stretching along it. "Is this the town?" said Vali. "It's no bigger than Akund." Bragi laughed.
"That's just the Bjorki at the mouth. That's our first problem."
Vali had never heard the expression before, so he asked what a Bjorki was.
"It's a collecting point," said Bragi. "If two big ships want to exchange goods, then there's no point them going all the way into port. They'll do it at the mouth of the inlet. Also, if a ship is on its way somewhere else, it can just pick up or drop what it has to here without wasting time stopping."
Vali found such haste difficult to believe. Who didn't have time to stop? What could be so urgent that you had to ply your trade routes as if pursued?
Riches, said Bragi, as if reading his mind. The first sheep at the trough drinks deepest. You don't want to turn up at a port with a cargo of whetstones if someone else has done the same the day before. These merchants want us to beg for their wares.
In other circumstances, Vali might have found Bragi's words exciting, the glimpse into a world that he knew nothing about. As it was, they just added to the sense of uncertainty he was feeling, of going into a situation unprepared. The vulnerability, he felt, did not come from the immediate threat of the Danes. Ever since his time in the mire, he had felt fragile, slightly removed from himself, not fully in the present. Still, he couldn't help wondering what else Bragi knew that he could tell him. Up till now, the old man had only ever seemed to want to talk about battles, and Vali had made the mistake of assuming that was all he had to say.
"Do you want me to pick a few holes in your plan?" said Bragi, as they got back into the boat and prepared to go across.
"Go on."
"Well, we have stolen clothes of the Rygir nobility. The Danes have just attacked the Rygir, and therefore could be considered to be at war with them. Heithabir is in Denmark, which, the last time I checked, was full of Danes. Now, I'm not a deep thinker like yourself, but it strikes me that should we turn up as we are, then we may as well put on the manacles ourselves to save everybody the bother of a struggle. You see what I mean?"
"There are problems with what I'm proposing to do," said Vali. "But I don't think we'll have any trouble. They have quite a few separate kingdoms. We'll be all right as long as Harik isn't there."
"If he is."
Vali shrugged. The wolfman said nothing, just sat staring at the sea as if he hated it.
Bragi said, "Well, assuming we get past the being cut down where we stand part, what then? They'll know that they can hold us for ransom or enslave us, both meaning a good profit. They may even think they can get the Berserk back."
"The Berserk is a mercenary and also not a Dane," said Vali. "They won't bother about him."
"So, what are we going to do?"
"Make use of what we have.
2 fine swords, 1 burnie, a sling, and a good set of teeth on your fellow here," said Bragi.
"You're missing the clothes," said Vali. "And this?" He held up a stubby black stick he had taken from the purse at Sinuti's belt. "This is as good a piece of eye dark as I've ever seen."
"What good will that do?"
"Well, if we're going to look like Rygir Jarls, then I suppose we'd better act like them. I'm going to ask for compensation for the raid." He held out the stick. "If you would be so good, Bragi, as to try to make me look as if I'm trying to please the vanities of a court, not like I've come to burn the place to the ground. Best not try it as we go across. I don't trust your hand on land. On water, I would fear for my eyes. And when we get there, treat me like a prince, a bit more bowing and scraping."
"Let's hope we can make them understand us."
"I speak their language," said Vali. "Not all my talk at Mardisa's house was wasteful." Bragi shrugged and took the stick. As Bragi applied the coal, Vali spoke to Felig. "And you, just tell them you're our priest. It had occurred to me to sell you, but I should think the Bernie will be enough to buy her freedom, if she's there."
"If the girl is there, I will take her," said the wolf man.
"You might find it easier to pay," said Vali. "Heithabir is a town of 1,000 people, if what I hear is true."
"Even you can't fight that many, wolfman. Though one day I will.
We will come here and burn their lands from shore to shore for what they have done." Felig just looked at him blankly. The problem of turning up in a fishing boat when pretending to be an ambassador had occurred to Vali, but there was nothing he could do about it, so he decided not to let it worry him. The wind was not entirely favourable, and the men had to row their way across, which Vali thought no bad thing. It was good to get there at the oar, clearly vigorous, clearly in charge of his destiny. As it turned out, the Bjor quay was no problem. It was no more than two houses and a collection of barrels with a few people sitting around them. A couple of the men on the shore raised their arms in salute as the boat passed, and Vali returned their greeting. "That went smoothly," said Vali.
"So far," said Bragi.
The wolfman looked around him. Like Vali, he had never seen a place like this. Small, flat fields of green oats turning to gold where the dark clouds broke and the sun poured through. They were on a long, narrow inlet, which was much calmer than the open ocean, and, for the first time since they had set off, Vali saw the colour come back to Felix's cheeks. As they moved up the river, there were small camps. Children ran down to the shore, trying to attract their attention, shouting out words, one in four of which Vali recognized. That word was stew, and if he had been under any misapprehension as to what they were talking about, their mothers stood by fires, rattling earthenware pots and making eating gestures.
"What hospitality!" said Vali.
"Not quite," said Bragi.
"They're offering us food."
"Yes, and they won't be handing it over until we've paid for it. In coin."
Vali laughed.
"It's a poor man indeed who takes payment for food from a traveller."
"Well, you'll find Hythabir full of poor men then," said Bragi. "Though you wouldn't know it by the silks they wear."
Vali concentrated on his rowing after that. To him, it was demeaning to ask guests to pay, no matter how many there were. Likewise, it was shameful for a guest who had made great claims on his host's hospitality to leave without offering a gift. The idea of paying for what you received had never even occurred to him until that moment, and it confirmed his view that Danes must be entirely lacking in honour. And he was going into a nest of them. It was 2 hours before he saw Hythabir. They rounded a bend in the inlet, and there it was, crammed by the waterfront.
He had never seen so many houses. They seemed to fill the gentle slope that led up from the river.
There must have been 100 altogether, not counting stables and wells, even a large church, as he now knew it to be, like he'd seen on the raid, marked by a cross on the roof.
It was as if the buildings were not properly anchored and had slid down to the harbour, pushing in on each other like cattle at a feed trough, shouldering each other aside in an attempt to get to... what?
There were 8 ships, 2 small snekkers, a fearsome drakkar and 5 merchant knars moored a few yards off the wooden jetties. The narrow space between the houses and the water was devoted to boat repairs, large and small. Here was a longship taking a patch to the bottom of its hull. There were fishing boats stripped to almost nothing. The boats reminded Vali of the carcasses of beasts, half eaten by wild animals, their ribs showing. Something strange was happening. 2 of the knars were full of rocks, and men were casting them overboard into the harbour. Vali realized that this must be some sort of defence they were building, a screening wall against sea attack. The idea was so simple and so brilliant that Vali wondered why his people or the Rigir had never thought of it. People were on the waterfront, a knot of 50 or 60 cramming forwards, shouting to them, some waving weapons, which made Vali feel he wanted to reach for his sword. Others brandished bizarre items, rich cloths, blocks of iron, necklaces and arm rings, clothes even.
"Do they mean us harm?" said Vali, eyeing one particularly large man waving a spear.
"Only to our pockets," said Bragi. "They're trying to trade with us."
He heard calls again in uncertain languages. Gibberish, some words in a weird Danish slang followed by...
Where are you from? My friends, where are you from?
We are Rhaegir,
shouted Bragi, which to all intents and purposes they were. The gibberish ceased, and everything became intelligible.
See these silks, carried for 3 years from Sirhaland. Glass from there too.
If you have furs, I will buy them.
Best price, best price. Ale and mead for the weary traveller.
Hello, mates.
Let's do business. My father was Rhaegir. Only the best deals for them.
Men were virtually fighting each other to get to the front of the wooden jetty, some almost falling into the water. Vali realized why the houses were crammed so tight. They, too, were trying to be as near as they could to the source of trade, the inlet. Now some of the traders were climbing into boats to row out, so Vali could see he needed to act quickly. Were they traders, though? One was very bizarrely dressed, with a wolf's mask on his face, not like Feleg's pelt, but a stiff thing made of wicker and fur. The prince stood up in his boat and shouted to the crowd,
I am Vali, son of Orthon the Pitiless, king of the Sword Horda, ward of Forkbeard, king of the Rhaegir. I am here to speak to your king, Heming the Great, son of Godfred.
Greetings to the son of the White Wolf,
shouted the man with the mask on. Three boats came towards them, two or three men in each. Vali realized he had little choice but to let them come alongside. When they did, he almost did reach for his sword. Not pausing for a breath, three men expertly stepped into his boat, one with iron ingots, another with a roll of carved daggers, and the third in the wolf mask, a small, fat man in many coloured silks. Vali could see as he climbed aboard that his hair was black and as slick as a seal's back.
Best iron in the world, said the man with the ingots. We can deliver as much as you like to your homeland. Think of the swords your smiths could forge with this.
Vali looked at the man. He actually did find his words persuasive, and began thinking about how, when he was king, he would love to equip his bodyguards with fine weapons they could use on these Danes.
This dagger was used to kill a dragon in the lands of the east. It will pierce even the strongest Birni,
said the man with the knives.
And what are you selling? Said Bragi to the man in the mask.
Bragi had tried to drain the belligerence from his voice, which made him sound more threatening than if he'd just shouted. The wolf-masked man let out a deep chuckle.
Everything, he said.
Feleg, who had watched all this with a kind of horror in his eyes, suddenly jumped up and roared at the man in the mask.
No,
said Vali, gesturing for him to sit down, but the ingot seller and the dagger man had both instinctively leapt for their boats. The knife merchant managed to roll into his, but the other, in his panic to get away, missed his step and fell into the water, drawing a huge laugh from the crowd. Only the man in the mask remained. He seemed entirely unperturbed by Felix's display and the sudden exit of his two friends.
"Sit down," said Bragi to Felix.
The wolf man ignored him and stood glowering down at the remaining merchant. Bragi put his weight suddenly to the side of the boat, wobbling it and forcing Feleg to grab for the rail.
I said sit down, said Bragi.
The wolfman did as he was told.
Berserks are such formidable bodyguards, are they not, Prince? And yet never quite your men for a pleasant hello. I was brought up among them, if you can believe it. We call them the Fukari. Men who live as wolves. First time in the big town for the boy, I bet.
Who are you? Said Vali.
I am your smoother of the way in Heitabir, your scythe in a forest of doubt, your beacon in darkness, your...
He asked who you were, said Bragi. Unmask yourself and face us as man to man.
The man took off his mask.
Veles Libor, he said, friend to the prince and to all who travel with him.
Veles, said Bragi. Veles, is it you? What are you doing here?
Living here, said Veles, at the invitation of the late King Godfred.
May whatever gods you find appropriate guard him in the afterlife.
And the good King Heming, may the same gods... Well, you catch my drift.
You have abandoned your people, said Vali.
The good King Godfred abandoned them for me, and he was so considerate as to burn down my hometown of Rerik. His generosity did not stop there, though. He was kind enough to offer, nay, insist, that we merchants transfer our business here. The chance to come to such a warm and pleasant land was far more welcome than the alternative, so here I am.
What was the alternative? Said Vali.
An inventive, original, and rare death, said Veles. It was the easiest bargain I have ever struck.
So you're a thrall, said Vali.
But a comfortable one. If you're going to be a slave, why not be the king's slave? And besides, the price of my efficiency is a certain level of freedom.
For the first time since he had returned to Akund with the wolfman, Vali laughed.
It's so good to see you, he said. And you. You have grown mighty, my prince. You must have killed many men by now.
Vali noticed he was looking strangely at the wolfman. Veles missed nothing, least of all something as obvious as the wolfman's resemblance to the prince. It didn't stop the merchant speaking.
I have arranged everything for your stay here. You are guests at my house. Whatever you want to buy here, whatever you want to sell, I will be pleased to do it for you. It would be my honor to conduct your dealings for you and lend you my expertise.
We are a delegation
from Forkbeard. Some business about Harik's raid, no doubt.
How did you know about that? No one could have travelled here more quickly than us, said Vali.
You are a seer, said Bragi.
Hardly, said Veles. I simply asked them when they passed through.
Which way? Said Vali. Veles looked hard at Vali. Come on, man. It's an easy enough question to answer. Were they on their way or... coming back from the raid.
On their way, said Veles. They have something you value?
A captive?
Magician, said Feleg in a low growl.
My skills are baser, I assure you, said Veles. It is my business to recognize want when I see it.
There has been a raid on Rogaland. The esteemed prince is dispatched to retrieve something that can be carried in such a small boat.
Very wise way to travel. You need 5 drakkars or none in these waters nowadays. Believe me, the pirates have nearly broken me in two. I bleed coin to them. Bleed it!
He seemed on the verge of losing his temper, but then caught himself.
So, it is a single captive. I can't think of anything else that needs diplomacy to retrieve. If it was gold, I think you would come with war paint on your eyes. Not these fine lines fit to please a lady.
He gestured at the coal that Bragi and Vali had applied to each other.
Where is the girl?
Said Feleg. Veles smiled broadly.
I do not have her here. But if she is to be found, then I can find her, said Veles. A girl? A princess, no doubt. Has little Ragnar been taken? I will help find her and expect no payment. Simply your thanks and whatever gift your generous people choose to bestow on me will be enough.
It is not Ragnar, though the captive is no less dear to the king. No gift would suffice to thank you for her return, said Vali.
Well, let's talk about the exact sums later, said Veles. I'm joking, of course, but please, come to my house, where you will be my guests. And you must see King Hemming. We should start by asking for compensation for the raid and the abduction of the girl. I'm sure he couldn't have sanctioned this, Prince. He wouldn't want to risk your father's wrath. I will handle everything. The amount, whichever way it is paid, the form, the delivery. The details of mere trade are beneath princes, or at least that's what the Franks maintain, and their empire seems to thrive on it. You need only return to Rogaland and wait for the happy outcome.
Vali felt his heart leap. If anyone could locate Adisla, he thought, Veles could. Chapter 28 Bargains. Hythabir was as much a marvel close up as it had been from the sea. Logs had been split and laid on the ground, so there was a solid path, firm underfoot. The houses huddled in so close that the thatches nearly touched at some points, blocking out the light. Each yard was fenced, some with individual wells. People shoved and bustled on the waterfront, and even in the alleys that led up from the jetties, you could hardly take 20 paces without encountering someone coming the other way. Still, the place was filthy. Piles of rubbish lay everywhere, and in places the wooden path was slick with shit. Would it have hurt, thought Vali, to have carried some of the mess down to the water and thrown it in? Hythabir stank, and he wondered that people could live in such fetid conditions.
"Danes," said Bragi. "They don't know the meaning of washing and cleaning."
"They are a filthy people," said Veles. "Say they're enemies. However, I have always found them to be scrupulously clean. As such, an opinion is more conducive to a long and happy life. This way, please."
They moved up through the town, crossing a bridge over a small stream that ran down to the quay. Vali marvelled at that, too. The stream had been cut into a channel and was as straight as an arrow. Was this stinking, teeming place the future, he asked himself. Then, in a square not far from the channel, he saw it, the market. All around were open barns, which he could see contained livestock. One was smaller than the others, squat to the ground like a normal longhouse, but without walls, the roof low and the space underneath it black. Vali went closer and saw ragged figures huddled in the darkness. Walking faster and faster, he ducked under the roof of the building and peered into the gloom. Pale faces looked back at him, some shrunken with starvation, others quite plump and healthy. All, however, were chained together. The smell was overwhelming. His eyes went from face to face. They were two monks, as he now knew them to be, as he'd seen on the island, a mother and two children huddling together, a tall man who could only be a Swede, sitting upright and defiant, and at the end a girl of around 17, blonde-haired, pretty, and staring blankly ahead. It wasn't Adisla, though. Not her at all.
"What is it you're looking for, sir? Market is 2 weeks from now, but if you offer the right price, the goods are yours. Or do you have slaves to sell? I will buy the right material."
Vali turned to see a well-dressed man in a dark cloak. He was carrying a long switch of hazel. Beside him was a red-haired woman he guessed was a freed slave, because she did not look Danish. She was carrying a set of keys.
"I'm looking for a woman who might have been brought here, taken from the raid on Rogaland," he said.
"The Rigir girls are cold," said the man. "Here, try this one at the end. She'll set your bed on fire, as long as you're willing to put up with a month of sulking while she gets used to you."
The girl looked at him from the darkness. Her eyes didn't contain hope or anything in particular.
"I want the Rigir girl," said Vali.
This one is from the Western Islands. That's as near as you're going to get to Rygiv, he said.
So Harik's men have not been here selling slaves? Said Vali.
They left a month back, said the slaver, and I haven't seen them since.
Hey, you pauper! Come away from there!
Vali turned to see Feleg inspecting the irons on one of the children. As the slaver ran across, raising his switch, the wolfman turned and let out a low snarl, a raw and angry sound, a boiling expression of animosity, a communication of the kind certain animals have sent to humans since earliest times. It was the sound the wolf and the bear make to their prey, a sound that speaks to the instincts, not the mind, and says only one thing, run. Vali sensed the fear come off the slaver, like the blast you feel when you pass the door of a smithy. The slaver dropped the switch and reversed direction, backing away from Feleg and falling back into some straw. The wolfman stepped forward and stood above him. Then Vali saw the knife. The slaver was a hard man and had recovered from the shock of Feleg's fury as he had fallen. He pulled a blade from his belt, and as he stood, drove it forward into Feleg's belly. There was a sound like a breaking branch, then another, and then a thump. It all happened too fast for Vali to take in. A breath after the slaver fell back into the straw for the second time, Vali's mind finally caught up with what he'd witnessed. Feleg had broken the slaver's arm, snapped his knee joint, and thrown him to the ground. His head flopped back into the mud with a squelch. The wolfman dropped on top of his man, teeth bared. Vali instinctively knew what was about to happen and leapt forward to push Feleg off. It was one thing to get into a fight within a blink of coming into town. That might even be good for their reputation. But savaging someone with your teeth was a step too far. Vali pushed as hard as he could, but the wolfman just turned his body, and Vali found himself face down in the mud. Feleg was tearing at the slaver's face with his nails, pulling the flesh from the bone. The noise he was making was unbearable, a demented, keyless howl. The slaver lost an eye. The woman stood watching expressionlessly as her companion suffered.
Feleg!
Vali got back up and shook the wolfman by his shoulders, staring into his face as if into a mirror. And then the nature of things seemed different. His consciousness seemed a wide and inclusive thing. It was as if the way of seeing things that he'd found in the mire had leaked into the day-to-day, as if the whole world was bathed in that dirty underwater light. Emotions pulled his head this way and that. The fear coming off the slaver, and from Feleg, a powerful sense of something trying to break out, something smothered under a blanket of pain. Vali forced himself to speak, though he didn't know where he got the words.
Feleg, please, said Vali. It's all right. Just leave him. Come on, you must be tired. Velis will have a fine bed, I'm sure. Better than the ground, eh?
The wolfman looked back into Vali's eyes, and Vali sensed that he shared something fundamental with this man, something deeper than could be conveyed by any word. He was connected to him. More than that, the same as him. The feeling made him shiver. The wolfman didn't move, just looked down at the man beneath him. The slaver was silent, blue at the lips.
"He's dead of fear," said Bragi. "I've seen it before."
Vali looked down at the body, and it was as if its smells leaked memories. He tasted sour curds, sea and wood, sweat and blood, caught the scent of smoke and rain, saw piles of gold and wide, bright skies. The sensations crowded upon him, and then they were gone. A crowd had been drawn by the noise. The slaver woman now pulled at Vali's arm. She wasn't upset or angry.
"I want Vergild. Compensation for my husband's death."
Vali had the bearing of a prince,
so she had naturally gone to him rather than the wild Felig, who seemed in some sort of trance. Vali didn't know what to say. He was trying to think straight. The fight had registered in his mind on a level beyond the fact of its violence, terrible though that had been. The strength of the emotions had seemed to wake a new sense in him, something between smell and memory. He felt dizzy, and his head began to ache. The wide consciousness of a breath before had retracted to a thin stream. There was a high-pitched ringing in his ears like the echo of a scream. The woman spoke again.
"Some compensation is right. I saw you arrive. You have a fine boat. If I can have that, then the matter is forgotten."
Veles put up his hand.
"I am the prince's representative in all such matters.
You will get no Weregild from us. Your husband attacked this man. The berserk did no more than shout at him, and your husband drew a knife. It is you who owe us compensation."
He turned to the crowd, some of whom were now coming in to look at the body of the slaver.
"Is that not right?"
There were some murmurings, a few half-hearted jokes, which Veles acknowledged with a smile. The woman seemed to weigh Veles' words in her mind.
"Give me 2 oars, and we are even."
Veles shook his head.
"My friends have a case against you. Give us all your slaves, and it is forgotten."
The woman looked at the crowd. She was not articulate, and Veles was a popular man.
"Give him the slaves," said a voice.
"The wolfman was wronged. I saw the knife," said another.
Others just shook their heads and laughed. The woman looked to left and right, hoping for a friendly face. There were not many.
"I offer you the 2 children, she said.
There was a mild change in Veles' posture, almost like a hound taking a scent. The stink of the slave barn seemed terrible to Vali, who felt as though he couldn't move. He put his hand on the low roof for support.
"They are more a burden than a help," said Veles. "Includes the parents, and my friend's claim is done." "Your man was no great loss. Look at your face. You didn't get that bruise from his kisses."
The woman thought again for a moment. She walked to the corpse of her husband and spat at it.
"Take them," she said. "I thank Jesus for my release. Few people are freed twice in their lives."
"Have them delivered," said Veles. "I have better things to do for the moment. And see that they're fed before they arrive. I don't want to start paying out until I've had at least a day's work."
The woman nodded.
"Bread, no stew."
"Stew," said Veles. "Or we put it before the assembly. And I tell you, you lose more than slaves for this."
The woman shrugged.
"Stew."
"Come,"
said Veles.
"We must away."
Felig still hadn't moved. Veles put his mask up to his face and looked at Felig through it.
"Woof, woof! Come on," he said.
Some of the crowd laughed, though others were still craning over the corpse. Remarkably, the merchant's mockery seemed to break Felig from his trance, and he looked up and followed his companions, Bragi patting him on the shoulder and congratulating him.
"That's how a man deals with people who pull knives on him, son," he said. "Ah, our Lord Tyr's holy stump. I could have done with you on a few raids. If I was 10 years younger, we'd get some plunder between us, eh? If you could learn to use a sword, there'd not be a man between here and Sirkland who'd face you down."
The wolfman said nothing. Vali followed Veles through the streets. He wondered if his time in the mire had taken too great a toll on him, whether it had affected his mind. Looking into Feleg's eyes had been a disconcerting experience, the violence worse still. There had been something intoxicating about it. Bragi was now in conversation with Veles.
"I thought that was going to cost us a helmet, at least," "You really are a magician, Veles," he said. "I have my talents," Veles replied. "She had already been paid by your wolfman. She's a rich widow now. I think she probably wanted to give Howling Boy a gift. I just showed her how it could be done." "What is Feleg going to do with slaves?" said Bragi, "other than eat them?"
"Give them to me," said Veles.
Veles' house was a big longhouse with bulging walls in the Heitherbeer style. It had a fenced area outside it, within which, on a stool, sat a Dane in a padded coat, carrying a large seax. Vali instinctively checked his sword was still at his belt.
"No need, no need," said Veles,
putting his hand on Vali's.
"This is my bodyguard, not a robber. He's paid to be here."
This shocked Vali. Why would anyone need a personal bodyguard? Couldn't the community guard itself against outsiders who might come to rob? Forkbeard's plunder sat in the open air for days after a raid, so the people could see his success and reflect on his power. His kin would never steal from him. Also, bodyguards worked for loyalty and honour, not pay. And only nobles had them. Veles was a commoner, a thrall, even. The whole thing struck the prince as immoral. Vali eyed the man suspiciously and went inside. The house was built around a big, single room, with separate pens for goats and small cattle leading off it. Vali thought this luxurious. In Deesa's house, the goats had shared the same space as the humans. Veles did not seem quite as prepared as he had said at the quay. There was no food for a feast, and not much in the way of ale, though the merchant had dispatched a boy and assured them that these things were on their way. The main living space was richly appointed with furs on the floors, the smell of sweet herbs masking the stink of the town outside and animals within, and the walls were hung with strange embroideries of wool and linen. One showed a woman surrounded by winged men, another the god Vali had seen at the raid on the island, again impaled like Odin on a tree. Veles saw Vali looking at them.
"Bought for warmth and beauty, rather than from religious fervor," said Veles. "One god being much like another, I find."
A small, dark woman, the same race as Veles, came in, along with a gaggle of three boys, their hair black and shiny. One of the children had a bear mask, like the wolf mask Veles now had in his hand. He held it to his face and chased the others, growling.
"You see what I mean," Veles said. "These objects are sacred to the Vale people of the north. A brother people to my own, the Neuri, have similar things. With a mask, a Neuri man or a northern sorcerer can transform himself into a beast. Here, there are playthings for my children."
Felix stretched out his hand for the mask that Veles was holding, and the merchant gave it to him.
"Why do you wear that?" said Vali. "To attract attention at the quay," said Felix. "Here a merchant needs to be seen. The Christians have a saying, a wolf in sheep's clothing. I, as you see, am rather the reverse."
Feleg was looking at the children and the woman through the mask. When he took it down, Vali could see that tears had come to his eyes. The wolf man was unself-conscious and made no attempt to wipe them away.
"The fire bothers you," said Veles.
Feleg shook his head.
"I am sad, because I am remembering my own family," he said. "How can you tear a man's face off in one breath and be crying for your mummy with the next?" said Bragi.
"I am a wolf," said Feleg,
and continued staring at the playing boys. Veles raised his eyebrows and shrugged his shoulders. Then he clapped his hands and spoke to the eldest boy.
"Yarilo! You are too old to be chasing around like that. Here, go and slaughter a goat. We have esteemed guests."
The boy picked up a knife and headed towards the pens, keenly pursued by his brothers.
Woman, fetch wine from Geary as quick as you can. Tell him payment will be his within the week. Is this how you prefer when I tell you the Prince of all the North is a guest in our house?
Now it was the woman's turn to look to the heavens, as she put down her broom and made her way outside.
You ought to beat her more, said Bragi.
I couldn't beat her more if I made it my only occupation, said Veris in a low voice, craning his head to make sure his wife was out of earshot. But still she doesn't obey.
She bears no bruises, said Bragi.
Obotrite women do not bruise easily, said Veris.
They also kick like cows and bite like sows. Come, have some ale while we wait for the wine.
There was a large bowl of the murky beer under a cloth on the side, and he passed it among them. The men drank, and as they did, visitors came and went. There were other merchants with their wares, there were curious children, and there were friends of Veles, come to meet the new arrivals. The butchered goat was brought in, and when Veles' wife returned, she grilled the meat over the fire, which Vali thought a strange choice when there was a stewpot within hand's reach. He wondered if this was some obotrite custom. Still, he had to admit it was delicious, and that the wine went very well with it. After the long journey eating fish and whatever plants they could find near the shore, the meal was lovely, and Vali began to feel light-headed. In drink, Bragi could not be prevented from telling the tale of the defence against the Danes, at several points holding Vali's arm in the air as he related some particularly momentous aspect of the victory. Eventually, Vali found himself seated next to Veles on a low stool near the fire. In the smoke and the glow of the flames, the Easterner resembled some sort of strange spirit, sparks flying around him as he spoke, the jewels he had put on in the safety of his house, amber and jet attached to his ears, gold arm rings and brooches sparkling in the firelight. Perhaps this was the Lord Loki he had prayed to, taken human form to help him, Vali thought. And perhaps not, though Veles was certainly a different sort of man, as Loki was a different sort of god. Vali knew no one else who dropped Eastern poems from his lips, or who talked always of markets and gold rather than battles. Veles had no means of support as far as Vali could see, no herds or fields, or even a trade beyond buying and selling. Vali found his company exhilarating, but at the same time unsettling. He thought of Adisla. Was she even alive? A crowd of emotions came in on him, anger, concern, and desperation.
"You are thinking of the girl," said Veles. "I can see she is more than a princess to you.
Your face betrays you. What is her name?"
The wine and the food, the warmth of the fire, and the feeling of being among friends lessened Vali's caution.
"Adisla," he said.
"Adisla?" said Veles.
Vali had not been able to imagine what would break Veles' mask of urbanity. That did. His voice dropped as if he was about to say something he needed to conceal from the others.
I remember her from my visit to you when you were a child. She's a pretty thing, I'll grant you. But tell me you haven't come all this way for a farmer's daughter.
Have you?
Vali swilled the dregs of the wine in the bottom of his cup and said,
She is everything to me.
Veles rolled his eyes to the rafters.
You sound like an Arab, he said. They're always banging on about love. Mine is the religion of love. Wherever God's caravans turn, the religion of love shall be my religion and my faith.
It seems a better choice than a religion of war.
Really?
Said Veles with mock shock.
And you descended from Odin as well.
I am sick of that fellow, said Vali. If there are gods, I would prefer one of love.
You should speak to the Christians, said Veles.
King Charles of the Franks piously follows the god Christ, who is a god of love. The king has so much love in his heart that he turns the rivers red with the blood of his god's enemies. That's a rare love indeed.
I'll be wary of that sort of love, said Vali.
You should, and of the sort you seem possessed by. It does not do to love women too much. Don't all your people say that? An Umayyad merchant told me one story of a caliph, a king of many lands, who fell in love with a slave girl. He could demand from her anything he wanted, but that wasn't enough for the idiot. She had to give it freely. He saw the wrong sort of look in her eye one night when they were in bed together, and threw himself off a tower.
What is a tower? Said Vali.
A high building, too high to jump off, big as a cliff. They have them in the east, like a fort, but not for war.
What's a fort not for war? Said Vali.
Veles laughed.
A woman's heart, it seems, at least according to our friend the caliph. There are plenty of women who will love you. If one doesn't, through inclination or circumstance, find one who will. Better that than chase half around the world to have what you could get for 30 silver at a slave market.
Vali looked into the fire. I won't abandon her. Neither you with jokes nor Forkbeard with threats will shake me from my purpose.
A look of dawning realization came over the merchant's face, and Vali knew he had said too much. Veles spoke in a hush.
One moment. Did Forkbeard approve of this little trip of yours? He didn't, did he? No wonder he didn't give you a draka.
Then his look turned to one of mild horror.
Have you Forkbeard's permission to be here at all? He said.
I am a prince of the Horda, not the Rigir.
Veles shook his head. That sounds as good as a no to me. Oh, dear, oh, dear. What did you think you were going to do about hemming? Sit there and broker some peace you couldn't deliver? Vali saw there was no use in pretending to the merchant.
I could think of no other excuse for being here.
Is that in itself not an indication that you shouldn't have come? Go back to Rogaland. Now. Have you any idea of the danger you've placed yourself in? Hemming sits at the center of a web of competing interests. If you don't have Forkbeard's blessing, he'll be almost bound to take you as a hostage, whether he wants to or not. He'll say you're here as his guest, but you'll be lucky if you see Rogaland ever again.
Vali couldn't tell if it was the wine, or just the need to unburden himself to someone he respected, to gain the benefit of Vele's advice. He decided to tell the truth.
I will never see Rogaland again.
Why not?
We are outlaws, said Vali.
Veles almost ducked, as if anticipating a blow.
What in the name of 9 kinds of devil have you done?
Vali shrugged. It was more to do with politics than actions. Veles had to restrain himself from plucking the wine cup out of Vali's fingers and shoving him through the door.
Are you an outlaw in Hordaland?
No, said Vali.
So, you've still some connections.
Veles thought for a moment.
Look, you must leave here tonight and go with one of my men to a place of safety. You can take your boat down the coast and wait in the forest. It is too dangerous for you here. Hemming will soon discover you've been outlawed. He has men in all the kingdoms. He may even want to ransom you to your father or Forkbeard. If Harek comes back here, he will sue to have you killed.
I'm going after the girl, said Vali.
I will send out for word of her. But you must come away. Immediately.
He actually took the wine cup from Vali's lips. Vali could see his old friend was serious.
Now, he said.
He eyed the luxurious piles of furs used for beds.
Now!
Vali went to the others, and they gathered their few possessions. Bragi was drunk and complained loudly about going back to a freezing boat, but Felix said nothing, just followed on.
6 pence up the river, the opposite way to where you came in. I'll meet you there, said Veles. I can't go with you. It's bad enough that I've entertained you here. Why didn't you tell me your situation from the beginning? We could have done all this very differently. Just follow the hill down to the water. Your boat will be where you left it.
Thank you, said Vali. I won't forget this.
Forget it. Just not before you've sent me a large gift, said Phyllis.
He kissed Vali on the cheeks in the obitrite way and pushed him out into the night. The men made their way down to the quay. Heithabir at night was beautiful. A deep field of stars shining down on the town, 1,000 tiny flames of hearth and candle flickering out as if in response. It seemed friendly, the country around something hostile. The dark beyond the town seemed to bristle with unseen malevolent forces, mountainsides with their murderous drops, sucking mires, trackless moors, and above all, a vast emptiness that meant that should you need help, there was no one to reach out to. That, though, was where they were going. In the distance he heard a wolf howl. It set the town's dogs grumbling from unseen shelters. Their noise, almost human in its complaint, made him wish he could stay in Heithabir, safe by the fire, rather than venturing out onto unknown waters. But then a figure stepped across his path. At first he thought nothing of it, but the man didn't move. Someone else joined him, then a third and a fourth. Vali looked behind him. In silhouette he could see the shape of shields and spears. There must have been 20 men. He looked at Bragi and the wolfman. He glanced left. Another dark shape crossed the alleyway and stopped. So, right then, there was no need for words. The three set off as one. They ran parallel to the water, up a slight slope along a narrow lane through the houses. At points, Vali had to duck as the roofs came low, nearly touching each other. He could hardly see and blundered forward in the dark, slipping on the slick planks of the path in an uncomfortable compromise between caution and haste. Never mind. If he couldn't see well, neither could their pursuers. The lights of candles and fires from open doorways trailed past him, golden smears in the dark. And then, to his left, a light of a different colour and size. A gleam of silver, there and then gone, like a blade flashing from the scabbard of the dark. The water. Here, he said, hoping Bragi and Felig were still behind him. They ran up the hill, quick as they could on the slippery logs. But there were shadows about them again, moving across the path. Vali turned across the slope once more, but their way was blocked, not by warriors, but by a wall of earth. The town had ramparts. They were surrounded on all sides. The figures didn't close on them, but remained at a distance. Bragi was at his ear.
"Get ready to take your place with your ancestors in Odin's halls," he said.
"I'll ask no one there to make space at the bench for me yet," said Vali. There were people all around him now, some with burning torches. They were nobles, he could see. Some had spears, but there were swords too, one of them drawn. "If there was ever a time to play the prince, this is it," said Vali. He drew himself up to his full height and strode towards the men in front of him.
"My word! I thought you were pirates. What are you men doing skulking about in the dark?"
"We are kinsmen to Hemming, King of Denmark, mighty ruler whose ships are numberless," said a voice. "At last you come. So slow a welcome does King Hemming bring
that I betook myself to mount my wave-steed once more. Truly, it seems that I shall eat sooner at my father's table 10 days hence, following the mackerel's backs to Hordaland, than wait on Danish hospitality. Vali